male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Let me just ask you, while we're standing outside, could you hear the voices from the Women's March here in Washington? We know there were more than 1 million people who turned out, and you are their president now, too.
That's true.
Could you hear them from the White House?
No, I couldn't hear them, but the crowds were large, but you're going to have a large crowd on Friday, too, which is mostly pro-life people. You're going to have a lot of people coming on Friday, and I will say this, and I didn't realize, but I was told, you will have a very large crowd of people. I don't know, as large or larger. Some people say it's going to be larger. Pro-life people. And they say the press doesn't cover them.
I don't want to compare crowd sizes
again. You shouldn't. Let me just say, what they do say is that the press doesn't cover them.
That is an excerpt of David Muir's recent interview with President Donald Trump. Oddly enough, a piece of the interview that no longer appears in the official transcript at ABC News, although in the age of the internet, it's out there someplace. Recently, one of the White House strategists, Stephen Bannon, told the New York Times that the press needs to keep its mouth shut and listen for a while. Is that an example of what Bannon was talking about, listening to the question, or at least the point the president was trying to make about the media coverage of the March for Life? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about that statement from Stephen Bannon and the ABC News interview with President Trump. Terry Mattingly joins us. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Is this interchange between David Muir and Donald Trump an example of what Stephen Bannon is talking about? They need to listen for a while.
Well, I don't know exactly what is happening in the mind of Bannon at that point. I'm sure that for Trump, if you look at kind of their obsessions of week one, this is talking about the whole issue of why did we win this race and why did you do such a horrible job of covering why we won this race. I'm sure that from their perspective, that's the big issue here. That's the big topic. However, this is a perfect example of why coverage of the March for Life and events similar to it has been a huge topic in media bias studies for decades, and why everybody will now be watching that coverage so closely this year, since you have it coming right on the heels of the Women's March on Washington, D.C., which the national press gave valid amounts of coverage to. The issue will be the degree to which the coverage of March to Life matches that coverage, resembles that coverage, or whatever. You have several historic things going on today in the march, which I watched most of it on C-SPAN and on EWTN. At the same time, you'd have to admit, it's also the first March for Life they've had with decent weather in quite a while. So we have a real potential here for unusual numbers. I was noticing on C-SPAN that the crowd was already marching. A continuous stream of crowd was already marching past the Supreme Court, and the march hadn't started yet. They had already released that many people. That didn't include the folks that were actually gathered at the rally and in the kind of secure area, the secure area being because of the fact that there was an appearance by the Vice President of the United States, which is another historic occasion here, especially since you're dealing with a Vice President who has attended the March for Life before, and other, you know, members of this administration have as well.
Let's talk a little bit in more detail about Stephen Bannon's statement. And this is what intrigued me. He is quoted as saying in the New York Times, I want you to quote this, the media here is the opposition party. They don't understand this country. When he calls the media the opposition party, What does that mean?
Well, first of all, I'd love to know what the word "here" means. One of the things, and this is typical Banyan and typical Trump, there are no qualifiers at all in this statement. I mean, as I like to say at Get Religion, why use a fly swatter when a baseball bat will do? He's just so incredibly blunt and simplistic here, assuming that all media fit into this same category. That's not the sort of language that I like to see applied to the press. I wonder if when he says the word "here," I wonder if he means New York, Washington, and in what I call the Acela corridor, Acela being the rapid train that runs people who can pay for it back and forth between Washington, New York, and Boston. You know, I'm intrigued by the statement all around. It's pretty typical for him. I'm even more intrigued by the astonishing press reaction to this statement, which seemed to go out of its way to ignore the context of what he said and turn the entire thought into Trump aide tells press to shut up, which seems to me to be, quite frankly, not a fair paraphrase of the statement when read as a whole. And it's also, and this is, I've got a piece going up momentarily at Get Religion on this, it also seems to me that there are other people surrounding the American press, including most courageously Liz Spaed, the public editor of the New York Times, who has been running pieces that essentially ask the New York Times to slow down, take a deep breath, and try listening. If you can't listen to Trump, try listening to the people who put Trump in office. And that would certainly include the people at March for Life. But the ABC interview is so intriguing. I'm getting, you know, notices from all kinds of people noting that the official video that is now archived at ABC and the official transcript, which is archived at ABC and which is discussed in great detail by the Washington Post, the transcript of the full interview with the president no longer includes these remarks about the March for Life. Which you could make a perfectly blunt little comment here if you were snarky enough to do so. Was he even listening to Trump's question? Did he even hear Trump's question, or did he just know, hey, I don't have to answer that. We can clip that. We'll come back to it later. Although, in honesty, there have been references to that comment elsewhere online, including at ABC News, but apparently it's not going into the archives.
Well, let's stop, pause there for a moment and talk about this. Okay, when either print media outlet or, in this case, ABC, when they say, here's the full transcript, or here is, and it's titled, Trump Full Interview with David Muir. Okay, when they use that term, full or complete or something like that, I mean, this is television. They're doing jumps and cuts all the time. Are they obligated to put in everything that the president said during those on-the-record parts of shooting that interview?
Well, certainly you would say that the full interview would include all of the footage that they previously showed. If not, you know, people tripping as they walk out the door, or the yard man, you know, going by cutting a hedge, you know, which I doubt happened in the, you know, outside the Oval Office. But I mean, I'm sure there are things that are not there. But I think at the very least, I mean, you're the broadcaster, you tell me. I would think at the very least you would say that the full video would include what you've already shown.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, the director's cut normally is longer and includes what was left out, unless you're Steven Spielberg, you don't go back and take things out, which he's done in at least one of his greatest films, and maybe I'm getting too picky here, but you know what I'm saying. Archives are supposed to be longer than what you previously did.
Okay, then let's talk about, as a political strategy, this notion of framing the media. And I agree with you, you can't be as general. It's not all media. But to say that the media here is the opposition party is, in my mind, kind of a brilliant no-lose political strategy at this point, since the press is polling lower than even Donald Trump.
Yeah, it is kind of an easy thing to take punches at. In this case, it's particularly brilliant on Trump's part because he knows that on certain key issues, the identity of the press and the stance it takes on things and the whole template they've used for coverage is almost identical to the Democratic Party. I mean, and these are things, including some things I disagree with him on quite sharply, but there are things here related to refugees and, you know, and trade, and there's all kinds of things that he knows that he is backing the side of the people who voted for him. So what does the man have to lose by punching that punching bag again? He has nothing to lose.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about White House strategist Stephen Bannon's statement to the New York Times that the media needs to just listen for a while. We'll talk about journalism and listening after this.
Common and experienced firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors. Coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. reformationgear.com. The new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC.
They had to take 8 years off of protesting. I've lived in D.C. for a long time. We had nothing but protests during the entire George W. Bush administration, the anti-war movement, the anti-globalization movement. Everything just went deep underground for 8 years.
One of the worst things that people can do to sandbag their marriage, thinking it's actually going to help to road test their marriage, is to cohabit.
It pulls us away from understanding who we are as an actual people who are united together, not around a common taste for, bland Midwestern cuisine, but a common confession of faith.
Our conscience is calibrated by the Ten Commandments, which means that I'm making a judgment on what is right and what is wrong based on the Lord's Ten Commandments. But then the conscience can only be comforted by the death and resurrection of Jesus and the forgiveness of sins.
In the last half hour of the program today, we're going to play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week. That's just a smattering of the soundbites. You can listen to the entire 4 soundbites at our website, issuesetc.org, the archive page there, and vote in advance by sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or we've left space at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Soundbite of the week in the last half hour of Issues, Etc., and the listener with the best vote gets the LPR bundle package. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about White House strategist Stephen Bannon's recent statement that the media needs to just listen for a while. Terry, speaking of listening, I'm not a journalist. I'm an interviewer. People often say, well, you get paid to talk. And my correction is, no, I actually get paid to listen. I work harder at listening than at talking. Isn't the basic task of a journalist first to listen?
Well, look at it this way. I tell my students over and over and over in journalism classes, the most important words in journalism are comma, space, said, space, name, period. Now, for listeners out there who are trying to picture that in their mind, picture a quote from anybody. Anybody on the street to the President of the United States, and it ends with comma, space, said space, name, period. In other words, the most important thing in journalism is, here are the voices that provided me the information that I'm asking you to understand, to get into the topic that this story is about. Attribution is the key word here. And a journalist should be as good as his or her ability to clearly attribute information. So without the ability to listen to people, hear what they're actually saying, in some cases, maybe even on the spot, quote it back to make sure you understood it. Without that, what is journalism? Beyond that, journalism is essentially essay and opinion writing. And that's not what the mainstream press has seen as its primary job since, oh gosh, the mid to late 19th century when the American model of the press emerged.
You ask whether or not the New York Times, and that could stand in for a lot of the media, is willing to, quote, cross the red line to see what this America, the America that elected Donald Trump, wants next. What are you pointing at?
Well, that's the statement by Liz Spaed, isn't it? That's in a lengthy response that she did just right after the election. Boy, how would you like to open that woman's email every day? I mean, you are the public editor for the New York Times, one of the two most powerful news organizations in the world. The only one that can compete with it, I would say, is BBC, especially in its global impact. And your day starts with opening her email. How would you like to do that? Talk about an impossible task. But she picked up very, very quickly that people out in America were saying, want to know why you blew this story? Want to know why the Times polling was wrong? Want to know why you missed the big political story of the year? Why don't you try listening to some people out here outside your blue zip code ivory towers? You know, many listeners will be familiar with a famous cartoon that ran on the front of the New Yorker. And I'm forgetting the exact title right now, but it's The View from New York, in effect. And it shows the towers of New York, as I've noticed it get religion. It's interesting that this cartoon image of New York includes no church steeples. I think it's fascinating. It's almost impossible to take a picture of downtown New York without getting a church. But this cartoon version of New York contains no churches. And then you have this long, dry, basic desert that is west of New York, you know, with dead cow skulls. And, like, I think maybe the arch at St. Louis is out there somewhere, teeny tiny. And then way off in the shimmering distance is L.A. And that's the view from New York. That's the view from the editorial offices of the New York Times. And what readers were saying is, if you want to cover all of America, at some point you're going to need to cover all of America. Which is interesting now, because it's clear that this is a source of tremendous debate and discussion inside the New York Times, because we continue to see glimpses of this debate surfacing in public media. The other day, they came really, really close to saying that they would strive, in addition to race and gender and sexual orientation, they would strive to hire more journalists with a variety of outlooks. And people immediately jumped and said, outlooks, is that the same as intellectual diversity? I would say, is that the same thing as religion? In some cases, on issues that Times leaders like Bill Keller have said they admit they're liberal on, what's the magic formula here that will get people at extremely powerful organizations to stop and listen for a while to voters of this kind? I don't know, but if Trump doesn't represent a 2x4 to the head, you know, I don't know what is, but I'm not seeing very much evidence of listening. And as always, our friend Molly Ziegler Hemingway has written a brilliant piece at The Federalist in which she pounces on this again, saying the media seems to be reacting in exactly the opposite manner than saying, okay, you have our attention, we're going to calm down, we're going to do a little bit less harsh editing of quotes, we're going to do a little bit less yanking things out of context, we're going to try to listen. We're not seeing much evidence of that.
That raises a question for me, Terry, and that is, we got 4 years at least of Donald Trump ahead. And Donald Trump has shown one thing, and that is he is who he is, and probably he will be the same guy after 4 years, probably more tired, but he's pretty consistent, whether you like that or not. How long can this go on where the failure to reflect upon their mistakes with regard to the press, how long can that go on before it just becomes silly or advocacy journalism?
Well, it could bury us permanently in the older European model of the press, where you have an openly ideologically identified liberal press, and the same thing happens on the right, and you have a more conservative press, at which point, you know, you might start watching to see if serious conservative alternatives begin to emerge. But what Trump is demonstrating is exactly why I, and I'm on the record on this show, why I was of the belief that he's not temperamentally qualified to be president of the United States. But it's clear that around him now are some people, including a vice president, that it would pay for these media outlets to consider listening to. And as we go into debates about the Supreme Court and abortion and whatever, it might help for them to look at some actual polls of the American people and contemplate, huh, who were these Latino voters that probably gave Trump Florida? Huh, who are these female voters who voted for Donald Trump? Who are these registered Democrat labor union people in these precincts that overwhelmingly voted for Obama and voted for Trump? If you could say anything to journalists at this point is if you won't listen to Trump, and trust me, I know that it must be hard. I mean, the man can't go three sentences without an insult or a statement of ego. If you won't listen to Donald Trump, will you please at least consider listening to the half of America that elected him when it comes to the heartland in the middle of the United States? Could we at least try listening to these people? Because, you know, there are stories out there, and there are stories out there worth covering. Give them a shot.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
In hour two of Issues Etc., Pastor Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith joins us. We're going to talk about the teachings of one of President Trump's spiritual advisors. You might have seen her at the inauguration. She offered an invocation or a prayer, Paula White. She was introduced as Pastor Paula White. Who is she? What does she do? And what does it mean that she is praying at the inauguration? We'll answer all those questions, Pastor Chris Roseborough, in This Week in Pop American Christianity. Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Hour 2 is next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.